The Guardian.
Welcome to Media Talk. I'm Matt Wells. And now for the news from where you live. Or perhaps not.
They're prepared to allow ITV to go to these super regions, which are huge, absolutely enormous, and no longer local.
As Jane Tranter leaves BBC Drama just after denying she was going, we ask, how can TV executives get away with such naked deception? Also on the podcast, Paper Talk, the big headlines from the world of newspapers, and... an old favourite in a new form. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. In the week when Michael Parkinson claimed ITV canned his chat show because he was too expensive, may I present your podcast panel, Editor-in-Chief of Media Guardian, Janine Gibson. How much are you paying us to be on this podcast this week?
How much am I paying you? I was just looking at the jammy dodger you've offered me in recompense for my services, thinking, good Lord, I'm cheap.
Is that it? Yes. And we're also joined by Owen Gibson, no relation, media correspondent at The Guardian. What are you going to do with your fee from today's show?
I'm pathetically grateful for this half a cup of lukewarm coffee that you've provided for me.
Very good. Gareth McLean is back. Back later on, but we start with Ofcom's equivalent of the difficult second album, phase two of their public service broadcasting review. And the big news is that there's going to be less of it, less news, that is, at least if you're watching ITV and you're living in any of the regions that are going to be merged down from 18 to 9. We've talked a lot about this in the course of the podcast, but now it's official. So Media Talk went to the top, the chief executive of Ofcom, Ed Richards. Down at Ofcom HQ, I put it to him that ITV viewers would be shortchanged by the recommendations.
Not at all. We have been very careful to identify where audiences' priorities really lie. They lie in British original programming, they lie in news and international news, and in local and regional news. And it is those areas that we have sought to protect in the proposals that we've set out today.
But Michael Gray is going to be cracking open his best cigar case, isn't he, today? Because you've given him pretty much everything that he asked for.
Well, what Michael Gray does today is entirely up to him. I've no idea what he'll be doing. What we've done is take an independent and objective view about how to balance the value that is in the ITV licence with the obligations that go with that licence. And we've done that by researching carefully what audiences' priorities are. And we've aligned our decisions or proposals with those priorities. And the proposals will be consulted upon now, and we will take a decision in the new year.
Okay, so if ITV isn't going to do these sorts of things in the future, public service commitment is going to be reduced, who's going to fill the gap?
Well, that is where we need to look at longer term models. We need to ask ourselves the fundamental questions about what kind of public service content we want in the future and what the best way of delivering it is. And we've set out three different models today. There was an alternative, which was a BBC-only model, but that attracted almost no support from anybody at all. So we're now focusing on three areas where we believe the most interesting developments and interesting debate lies about how we deliver public service broadcasting in the future.
The only realistic option, surely, is the, because in these straitened financial times, government's not going to come up with any more public funding. You're going to have to find it from money that's in the market already, and that's realistically going to mean top slicing the licence fee, isn't it?
Not at all. Firstly, I don't accept the top slicing phrase. People believe top slicing means cutting BBC budgets for core programmes and services, and we are against that. And if that is what top slicing is, we are against top slicing. In fact, what we do is set out a range of credible options for funding in the future. One of those is using the BBC switchover surplus, the money in the licence fee settlement, which is used to pay for set-top boxes for over 75s, which is not in any way related to the BBC's core programmes and services. But we also set out the other credible options, an industry levy, direct funding, or indeed regulatory support through free spectrum. And all of these are credible and serious options which need to be considered.
The BBC doesn't accept this surplus argument, though, does it? They say it's part of the core licence fee.
I'm not sure what the BBC position is on it. I'm very clear what our position is, and that is there is around £130 million per annum in the current licence fee settlement till 2012, and all you would need to do is retain the licence fee at the current level, and after 2012 that would yield about £130 million a year, which could be used for other purposes.
Could that some of that money be used to help Channel 4?
It is one of the four credible options which should be considered as a means of meeting the deficit, the challenge, the risk to the future of public service broadcasting outside the BBC.
All of this is going to require a new regulatory framework, isn't it? It's public money for Channel 4, potentially contestable funding you've talked about as well, where people could bid for public money to fund public service content. Might regulate all of that? Might it be an experienced regulator? You guys are all set up for this, aren't you?
We're certainly not looking for more work. It's true that as we work through these alternatives,
you've got plenty of those here.
Accountability and governance will be a dimension of what we need to consider. We haven't reached a view on that.
One final question, if I may, on Scotland. There's particular concern in particularly the border area, and you've identified it. Do we need to look at redrawing the STV and border franchise areas so that Scotland gets all of Scotland and all viewers in Scotland get their own news programme?
One of the things that we're looking at for 2014, when the licence period comes to an end, is potentially redrawing the ITV or Channel 3 licences. There are a number of options. One is to have licences for each of the nations of the UK, so England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Another is to actually go straight to a simple single UK licence with requirements in the nations or in the region. So I think there are different options there, and certainly we should be asking ourselves what the optimal way forward is there. I certainly don't think we should be ruling anything out on that at this stage.
As you can imagine, the trades unions aren't happy. One of the broadcasting union's representatives was at the briefing.
Luke Crawley, Assistant General Secretary, Bexley.
What do you make of the proposals that Ofcom have come out with today?
I think the biggest impact they're going to have is on ITV local news, and I think the impact is going to be devastating, frankly. For example, if you live in the West Country, you'll be living in a region that stretches from Penzance to Gloucester, 250 miles, and it's difficult to see what it can mean to have a local programme about somebody who lives 250 miles away from you, and I think the impact will be people will see less programmes about their immediate neighbourhood.
The trouble is that ITV has got it's finding it very difficult to do these sorts of things, very expensive, and Ofcom hasn't got all that much power over them, particularly after 2012, 2014, when the licences run out.
That's true, and it's quite an important issue, but at the moment ITV effectively have free access to analogue spectrum. That's going to be turned off in 2012, and they seem to be expecting free access to digital spectrum on the Freeview platform, as well as positioning on electronic programme guides, and we think there's a cost to that, and that cost, the obligation for getting that should be to continue to make proper local news programming, amongst other things.
What's the impact on jobs going to be?
ITV have been very careful to say nothing until after this announcement's been made, and we're hoping to meet them as soon as we can following today, but our estimate is between 300 and 400 redundancies across the whole of the ITV network.
So, Owen, you were down there too. We're finally getting, inching there, aren't we? And we heard what Ed Richards had to say, but it was interesting what Maggie Brown wrote on her blog after the briefing, saying that Ofcom looked remarkably bloodless from this. They didn't put up much of a fight to ITV.
Well, I think you can argue that, but you can also say Ofcom's in an incredibly difficult position when it comes to this regional news. Actually, Ofcom's got very few levers left to pull, and the meat of what Ofcom's left to contribute is basically in laying out these options to government for the future. In terms of regional, it could have said to ITV, you can't do this. ITV would have turned around and said, we're taking 40 million quid out anyway, we're sacking 500 people.
And we'll give our licences back.
And potentially down the line, we'll give our licences back. So I mean, nice as it would be to think that Ofcom had the power to stop ITV doing this, the sad truth is it kind of doesn't.
No, it's absolutely right, and Maggie is completely right. And if I may be Maggie Brown in this, in the old I remember when corner, she's right to say that light touch regulation simply hasn't worked here. And when you take the old step back, and we may as well because it's Ofcom Public Service Review, you can't really view it in isolation from all the other public service reviews we've had. And you've got to say that Chris Smith actually is the person at whom we should point the finger here.
Chris Smith to blame.
Chris Smith was a great culture secretary. He did really good work with the BBC. He did all the right things there. What he did with ITV, and I think he was just instinctively a bit uncomfortable with regulating the market and didn't know where to put himself, was he set the rules that said, I'm going to be the light touch regulation principle, which everybody has clung on to, and ITV has used a stick to beat the regulator with ever since. And what have we seen since that major shift in regulation? We have seen huge problems with content. We've seen a retreating from public service. We've seen an absolute stepping back of all the obligations and an increasingly powerless regulator unable to do anything about it. So, yes, they couldn't do anything about it yesterday. And the real problem for Ofcom now, and for Andy Burnham, and for Ed Richards, all ambitious men who I'm sure would like to have more say over how it works, is that the government is not going to pay any attention to this. The moment when media was important enough to be on the legislative agenda has completely passed.
And this is a real problem now for Ofcom and the broadcasting industry, isn't it, Owen? Because all of this now needs legislation.
The collective kind of political will to do anything about any of these issues is kind of is draining away by the day. And Andy Burnham, I've just come back from Andy Burnham's speech down at the Barbican. He was speaking at the RTS conference. He claims that they don't need a new Communications Act. He claims there are sort of legislative levers they can pull in the meantime.
How do they do without a new Communications Act?
You can't. I mean, there are things they could do without a large new act.
Right.
There are sort of bits of legislation they could try and get through in between all the others. But he needs buy-in from the rest of his colleagues. Meanwhile, the Labour Party is tearing itself to pieces and there's a general election looming. So you've got this very detailed, complex debate going on within the walls of Ofcom and among us lot, if you like. Whereas meanwhile, you just fear that...
In the real world.
You just fear that the will's not there to do anything about it. And the fear for, say, an Andy Duncan, and he voiced this fear after Andy Burnham's speech, was
Channel 4.
Within sort of, we'll turn around in sort of 2 or 3 years, actually, and we'll have identified the problem but kind of done nothing about it, and by then it'll be too late.
Just to add into the sense of it's all gone to hell in a handcart, the city's not interested anymore either. So the money's dried up, their economic recession has completely screwed the advertising-funded element of it, and the government isn't interested in putting in regulatory levers. So actually the media industry just starts to look like everybody's sort of forgotten about it, and they're not used to it. They're used to being the centre of everybody's attention. Not going to know where to put themselves.
What are they going to do? Well, we'll leave that there and see what happens. That's that, but not quite. There's now to be even more consultation on this, and I can tell you that Ed Richards is just as excited about that as you and I. And when is it all going to end? We've been talking about this for years and years, Ed Richards, even since you started at Ofcom. Is there an end in sight to this process?
You and I both been talking about it for years. I would love it to go faster myself. You have to believe me on that. But we have to do a proper job. Sometimes these things do take a little longer than we'd all hope. But the most important thing is to come up with a robust answer in the long term.
God save us all. You can tell Ofcom what you think of their plans if you want to, but quite frankly, we'd rather you shared your thoughts with us and your fellow Media Talk listeners on our blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Still to come.
Hello!
Hi, I'm Lauren.
And I'm Danny.
And I'm Bibi.
I'm Jez.
I'm Claudine.
And I'm Lola.
We're students at Britannia High.
The latest Great Hope for ITV on Saturday nights. But before that, it's been announced that the BBC's Controller of Fiction, or Head of Drama to you and me, Jane Tranter, is to leave for a big new job in America at the start of 2009. But actually, perhaps that fiction title is rather appropriate. Just a few months ago, she denied to an audience at the Royal Television Society that she was going anywhere. Let's have a look at what all this means. Joining us, slid into the pod, is Gareth McLean, Guardian TV writer. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Good. I'm great, thank you very much. Now, you've taken a close interest in the career of
you could see that, yes.
What do you make, Gareth, of the fact that she denied that she was doing this?
Well, she'd said, I'm not about to go off. So that's a handy about, which I guess meant I'm not going to go next week.
Right. Is it acceptable, Janine, for TV executives to stand up and say things like this? Why is it acceptable, I should say?
Well, it isn't acceptable, obviously. All right. We all know that nobody should lie. Where were you raised? Given that I am now sharing a microphone with Gareth and we fundamentally disagree about both Jane Tranter and BBC drama, I'm going to have to stand up for her lying now, aren't I? And Jane, I'm very disappointed that you've put me in this position. However, I would say, in mitigation, Your Honour, I would say, if you're in the middle of accepting a new job and somebody's approached you about it and you're in the middle of a negotiation, it's commercially sensitive, then perhaps you might not want to talk about it on air. For example, we could turn round to any member of the group in this room and say, have you got a new job? And they might say, no. So
yes,
on a human level, we must show understanding.
She could have said, I'm just not going to talk about that. couldn't she?
Oh, we would have loved that, wouldn't
we?
Okay.
All right. what does this all mean then, Gareth?
It means Ben Stevenson gets a promotion.
he's her deputy in it.
He's become head controller drama commissioning now as opposed to head of drama commissioning.
You've got to look back at her record and you've got to say she's done a really pretty damn good job.
She has done an incredible job. I don't dispute that. I think she's an incredibly talented individual. What's happened is that there's been a concentration of power in that controller of fiction. You say that she's head of drama, but she was, but she's also head of comedy and head of BBC films. That's all been brought under the auspices of that fiction Orwellian moniker, and I think that's where the problem's lying. And if you look at the recent track record that there's been, you've had your Cranford, we'll never get away from Cranford, that's just held up as a sort of, and it was absolutely brilliant. But we've also had your Spooks Code Nines, your Bone Kickers, Marlin, hello. It's absolutely awful. And it's these newer ones that are sort of coming through. There's a sort of new atmosphere, I think, at BBC Drama, and it's about, we must go for this younger audience, we must have things that we can put online, we must do this, that and the other. When they've lost the ability to tell good stories, good scripts, quality actors, the acting pool that they're choosing from diminishes and diminishes. And I think it's a real kind of lack of imagination on the part.
Janine, you don't agree with this?
It's not that I dispute that Spooks Code 9 was a pile of pants. That, by the way, we're in perfect agreement on, and I didn't fancy Merlin much either. But I would say it was ever thus. I can't name a commissioning editor who's had a hit-only regime. I just haven't. I've yet to meet that person.
Not even the great Nick Elliott.
Jane Tranter has done much better than most. I think even BBC comedy has got better, and I would point to things like Outnumbered, which makes me laugh out loud. Not a sitcom's made me laugh out loud for about 10 years from the UK. So, hooray, tick. We should all say well done and be big enough to say good job, well done. Whether we should now look at it, because I agree with Gareth on one key aspect. BBC Fiction, I would say, worked because she is an exceptionally talented individual. Mm. I don't think you can maintain that structure for somebody else. It worked for her because, let's remember, she was offered BBC One controller, didn't want to do it, knew she was better as a head of production, and they had to promote her because she's just so talented and good. Mm. So they put everything together for that person. What you don't then do, if you're sensible, is keep that structure and then put somebody less experienced or less tried and tested or less broad in it. This is where Gareth and I are going to fall out while sharing a microphone. It's going to get ugly. She is a woman who has done very well and has consolidated a lot of power. And the only drama writers I've heard bitch about Jane Tranter are all men. Right. And I've never heard Jane Featherstone bitch about Jane Tranter.
But that's the argument that Janet Bennett put after the piece appeared, that, it's just sort of embittered writers and producers who don't get things made, when actually it's not. People I spoke to, and the people I've spoken to since this has been made and since Ben Stevenson's been promoted and there's been that bit of a shake-up, they're all still concerned that there's this real lack of kind of imagination there. There's a micromanagement that goes on about casting. There's all this marketing speak that goes on, and there's been a real loss of a sort of vision at BBC Vision.
That a certain type of drama that used to be done very well on BBC Two and latterly kind of gets a bit of an outing on BBC Four, but not nearly as much sort of intelligent drama. And we're not disputing that sort of Spooks and Life of Mars and Westfield aren't intelligent. Is there not a stripe of drama that perhaps has suffered under?
I think that it's absolutely true. It would be clever PR to put more oomph behind them. But the problem they had to attack was exactly the sort of upper middle brow populist drama that we were all sitting around going, they can do it in America, why can't they do it here? Why can't they do it? And you know how they can do it? Through consistent, disciplined micromanagement and attention to detail and focus on marketing and slickness.
All right, we'll leave that there. If you have equally strong views to our panel on this, go to the blog, blogs.guardian.co.uk/organgrinder. Now, this week ITV launched its next big Saturday Night Hope, Britannia High. You could say it's in the high school musical tradition, if such a tradition exists. Media Guardian's Lee Homewood went down to the press launch to meet the creators and the cast. Lee is with us now. Perhaps you can start by explaining what the show's about, Lee.
Well, basically, it's a British version of High School Musical with a bit of Fame mixed in. Plus, you've got some big names involved with it as well. Take That, Gary Barlow.
Is he writing the songs?
He's done a few of the songs. And Strictly Come Dancing judge Arlene Phillips is involved as well. It's her creation, along with a theatre named David Ian. In a moment, we'll hear from Sapphire Elia, who plays Claudine Cameron in the programme. But first, here's Arlene Phillips. I asked her if this was the biggest thing she's ever done.
It's certainly the biggest project that I've ever been involved with on the creative side. Bruno Tonioli and I created DanceX, which was done the year before last at BBC, and then it's in America as Dance Wars. But certainly this is massive.
Yeah. And what would you say to people who say it's very much like High School Musical? Is that a compliment?
I would say, well, obviously, anything that is a compliment in that it is something as big as that. But I know that this is, you know, not for very, very young children. And I know this has a more serious side and some deeply emotional and dramatic stories, which can only evolve as people see the series.
And who's it aimed at? Is it aimed at teenagers or families?
No, it's aimed at family. It really is big family viewing. I mean, just as Fame was family viewing, but this embraces a younger audience as well. It is for a big family audience. I think it can reach all ages because of the storytelling. You know, it can reach parents, grandparents, because it's a big family thing as well as all the young people.
And obviously, you're turning to Miss Saturday Night with Strictly on BBC One and this big show as well. Again, is there any conflicts there between the two?
No, Strictly is huge, and Strictly will go on being huge, and I love being a part of Strictly. But obviously, I'm hoping that my baby also gets good viewing figures.
I'm gonna give more than it takes, work harder than the rest, till I'm the very best.
It's been a unique experience. It's been exciting, it's been tough, there's been tears. I think all the hard work has definitely paid off from what I've seen, and there's a lot more to come.
And is it like real life at all? Have you been through this sort of stage school process yourself?
I have, yeah. I did go to stage school.
Is it like
it's
that?
Very similar, yeah. The highs and the lows, the amount of work that you have to put in to succeed and do well, obviously the singing and the dancing and all that kind of stuff, and the relationships, really. And I think more than anything, the show is about young adults who are trying to fulfil their dreams, which is basically, it's not just this, what happens at you know, performing arts school, that's kind of just people in general.
And are you prepared for the fame that's going to come with being in a big Saturday Night TV show?
I'm not prepared for the fame.
You're excited?
I'm excited, yeah.
Sapphire Elia there, one of the cast members. So this programme, Lee, has been commissioned by Paul Jackson. He's the man at ITV in charge of it, isn't he? And it's sort of a farewell show for him.
It is, yes. A couple of weeks ago, it was finally confirmed that he was leaving ITV. There's been a lot of speculation about him since Peter Fincham arrived at ITV in May. Jackson is a big name in sort of TV entertainment. He's behind these big sort of shows like Britain's Got Talent and The X Factor.
He's the director of entertainment.
He is, yes, and he's off early next year. We did get on to discussing his departure, but before that, I asked him how big this programme is going to be for ITV.
Anything you commission for the prime weekend schedule is important, and it started off as a slightly mixed commission, a drama with music, so in itself that's something new, so that adds pressure, but it was a commission for the autumn schedule a year ago. And then just because of the nature of it, with the music connection with Universal, the CDs, the release of the music, Gary Barlow being involved, David Ian and Arlene being involved, which obviously had implications for an afterlife on the stage, it seemed silly not to involve the other platforms that ITV has available. ITV2, where the documentaries will show at some point, .com, mobile. We then developed the idea of creating the social networking sites, which we did a deal with Bebo in the end. So it grew and grew as it went on. So now, sort of, you find yourself sitting here with a month to go thinking, oh my God, this is across every bloody... If it works, that's great. If it doesn't work, then of course it doesn't work in lots of places, you know.
And what are your aspirations for the show? Are you is this going to be as big as The X Factor?
No, I think when we started Got Talent, we never said we'd like it to be as big as The X Factor, because you're saying I'd like it to be as big as the biggest show on television, and that's a hard thing to do. I would be very happy if we get a solid returning family audience with good demographics, playing preferably in opposition to something on the BBC that has a slightly different demographic mix. It would be great if we can add not a entertainment format show, but a scripted show that has that same impact.
And where can you schedule this in the weekend schedule? Obviously, Arlene's on BBC One with Strictly, and she's involved with this as well. Can you put this head to head?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think in a reasonably sane world, what the BBC and ITV try to do and have done for the last many years is not to give audiences impossible choices, because I think it pisses the audience off. On the other hand, Arlene isn't really in the show, and you know, we can't not play against Strictly Come Dancing if that's the right place to play it. But as I say, literally, this is one that will be sorted on the famous Wednesday meeting when everything goes, we've got no idea where the BBC are going to play stuff, and we genuinely therefore haven't decided where we're going to play it. We've got an embarrassment of riches on Saturdays at the moment.
And I guess this is one of your last major commissions really before you leave.
This will be the last ITV. Big show from me that will hit the screens.
And
yeah.
So obviously, you know, long career at ITV, some huge shows. Do you think this will be up there? And you know,
as I've said, my aspiration, my wish would be that my parting sort of gift to the network would be a hit show at the end of this autumn. And whether it's hit or not, who knows? But if I could leave ITV with a hit and this production team with a second season, I'd be a very, very happy man.
And what's the future for you, Paul? Do you want to go back into production to work for big shows like this?
Yes. You know, why do you join this business? You join this business. I remember saying to Simon Cowell on the first final of X Factor when I took it over, this is why you join the business. It was the night Leona won, in fact. And you know, that's why you're in the business, to be there when Leona wins. It's a buzz, and you get closer to that buzz by producing than you do by buying.
Paul Jackson, the outgoing director of entertainment at ITV, not name-dropping at all there. Lee, what is the result of the Media Guardian jury?
I think the jury's still out on this one at the moment. The first thing that struck me was that it's like High School Musical, but a High School Musical light. It didn't have as big an aspiration as the Disney show. And it's pretty corny in places as well. But, you know, I'm in my 30s now. I'm not the target audience.
Are you really?
Just about. So, you know, not really aimed at me, more aimed at sort of teenagers. Although I was sat with a few people who were in their 20s, and they found it pretty corny as well. So I don't know. I think it often takes more than one episode to kind of get into these things. So we'll see how it does in episode two.
Yeah, we will. You can have a look at the trailer and tell us what you think on our blogs. The Champ has already described it as, quote, a cynical money-making exercise. No shit, Sherlock. And other claims of there have been other claims of rip-offs of Fame and High School Musical as you'd expect. So not a lot of love for it on the blog then. But as Lee says, perhaps we'll watch it first. Leave a post about what you think about it at guardian.co.uk/MediaMonkey.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on guardian.co.uk.
I just stepped out of the pod to walk over to the Media Guardian news desk, where I find Stephen Brooke, our press correspondent, to do a bit of rounding up of the newspaper stories this week. And Stephen, interesting to note the full colour launch of The Independent this week. What did you make of it?
I thought they did a good job on it. They've got a Spanish design firm, Casas Associates, who they've worked with before and who also did the Mirror full colour relaunch, and now the Indie is actually using the Mirror presses, which is why it's launched this week, which is later than most other newspaper groups, the Express notwithstanding. So, of course, the other news about the Independent is that it's put its price up to £1. Only the FT is more expensive on a weekday. And I think they're hoping that their readers will stay with them because they're giving them this colour.
It's handier, a pound, though, isn't it? 80p is one of those funny prices, I think. I think if you've got a pound in your pocket, do you reckon they'll lose money, readers?
I think the people that buy the Indie really love it and are probably A, prepared to spend a pound, and B, can afford to spend a pound. But it's a bit of a psychological barrier, isn't it? It's like when the Sunday Times went up to £2 and suddenly everyone went, oh, that's £2. The other thing that the Indie are doing, of course, is that they're trying to lock people into subscriptions. So they've heavily advertised within the London area. Subscribe to us, we'll have the paper on your doorstep before 7 a.m.
All right, we had results in another part of the market from the Daily Mail and General Trust this week. What were they like?
Well, shocking, I guess we can say. And the effect on the share price of DMGT, which is regarded as impregnable, fell 10%. So they're in trouble, and the media downturn is starting to bite at even these firms that previously have been able to power through. The bad results really were in the regional Northcliffe division, which suffered a 24% year-on-year slump in advertising in September. So to some extent, the whole company is diversified because they do a lot of things in exhibitions and live events, etc. But the news is out there, and actually we've got a special on the Media Guardian website this week. If you've got to rely on advertising and you're a media business that relies on advertising, then 2009 is going to be a horror show.
Okay, check out the Media Downturn feature on mediaguardian.co.uk. There were results, quite good results actually, for newspaper websites this month.
There were the ABCE figures, which are the industry standard, were released, and August is normally a really quiet month because everyone's on holiday and print circulation falls quite significantly. But what did we have this August? We had the Olympics, and that produced a boon for newspaper websites. So quite a lot of sites, including The Guardian, held record results. So The Guardian had about 23 million unique users, which was a 46% increase from last August, but was also up on July. And this is what's really unusual, and that most groups, The Telegraph, The Times and The Mail and even The Sun, found that they rose from the July figures, which is a bit counterintuitive because you expect more people will be away and not that interested in the news. But everyone fell in love with the Olympics, didn't they? And the web proved to be a very successful vehicle in feeding everyone's appetite for that.
All right. Trouble up north in Glasgow, to be precise, at the Herald Group, where the Media Guardian headline was "Herald staff suffering from stress."
Yes.
It's a sort of a do bears defecate in wood sort of thing. There, we're all stressed, aren't we? But
what was the news about this? The news was that the NUJ went around and did a survey and said, "Are you stressed?" They could probably go to all newspapers everywhere to ask the same question, but in Scotland, the homegrown newspapers are suffering a bit because of this encroaching onto their turf by the Scottish editions of all the big London-based nationals. But the Herald has its own particular problems with job cuts that have bitten much more severely than at other nationals.
All right, Stephen, I notice you're not remotely stressed, are you?
I thrive on it.
Thank you very much. Time for the man who's had more comebacks than Frank Sinatra. It is, Gareth, this is your slot now, Gareth.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Now I've got the whole mic to myself.
Are you not supposed to be on your holidays at the moment?
I am, but I sort of came in because I missed you all so much.
Oh, that's very nice. What have you missed, Gareth? We haven't a chance to talk about Merlin properly.
Ropey, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really shocking. I can't understand. How do they manage not to learn anything from
Robin Hood? Yeah. It actually makes Robin Hood look quite good, I imagine. So, Tiger Aspect must be really pleased. There are two problems with it. It's been called family drama, but for it to be a family drama, there need to be layers, there need to be levels for it to work on.
Yeah.
Like something for adults, something for kids, and that, in that way that Toy Story and all those films have that kind of multi-layered thing. It doesn't. It's a kids' drama. It's masquerading as family drama.
Yeah, and
it's really unsophisticated, and it's really
leaden wooden.
One would float and one wouldn't. Which is it? Maybe it's a leaden script, but the wooden acting.
Yeah, maybe it's
what
that.
Could you build out of it?
A pencil.
A lot of pencils. The problem with it, really gets me, is that it's in awe of its CGI.
Which in itself is not that great.
Well, yeah, I think we've become very sophisticated.
Right.
And, we expect things to be amazing. And you look at something like Heroes, say, and you think, oh, that's the way to do it. But the problem with Merlin, I think, and actually this is a problem with Bone Kickers again, and I think it's Doctor Who's fault, is that the CGI is there instead of plot, is instead of stories, instead of a good script.
I don't know how you can even begin to say there's no plot in Bone Kickers. There are many things you could attack, but lack of plot really was an issue.
You're a fan, Janine.
Oh, no, look, Gareth and I are just going to argue again. I loved Bone Kickers.
You are deranged. You are deranged. Are you the word boy on the blog? Gareth is suspicious. Yes, so and it's a problem that in something like Heroes, say, or all those American dramas, obviously they've got more money, I get that. But you look at things and you think the CGI serves the story, it serves the kind of the plot. But with this, it's like, oh, look at us, aren't we clever?
You've also missed, Gareth, while you were away, the end of Western Capitalism, which has been exciting. Which has been big news for Robert Peston.
He's done very well, hasn't he, out of it? He keeps breaking stories and breaking banks, isn't it? Isn't that his fault?
Isn't it?
H-Boss, is that gone away?
He's just the most extraordinary. He must work.
All
the time. And he must have a little, camp bed in the Today programme studio. And
a little camp bed? Isn't that Evan Davis's?
No, I don't think it is. But that was quite funny. Funny old voice, though.
It is weird, isn't it?
Because
I have been in the countryside where there is only Radio 4. And,
isn't there BBC Radio Norwich as well?
Oh, possibly, but I haven't. Is Alan Partridge? Is that the one who's on?
Did you hear that interview with Hardeep that's all over the interwebs this week? Listeners, if you haven't heard it, it's linked to from Media Monkey. Oh, were you going to mention it?
I was going to mention it, but anyway, we'll just finish on Robert Peston. He does need a bit of voice coaching, doesn't he?
Well, he does, but I don't think either of us in any position to judge other people's voices.
Well, what you mentioned, talking about Partridge like interviewing style, was Les Ross, who is a giant of I should explain to the listeners that Gareth and Janine are arguing over the microphone at this moment. Who's going to get it?
Sorry, I wasn't listening to the question. I was trying to guess. What was the question?
I was mentioning that I was queuing up the Hardeep Singh Kohli interview. He was interviewed by a local radio DJ in the West Midlands called Les Ross.
That's right.
Was it
Les Ross? In French, Les Ross.
It was weird. I mean, Ross had obviously done absolutely no research at all.
None.
But was also struggling with the whole race thing, wasn't
he? He was having a bit of a moment. There's no doubt. I mean, really, you don't want to ruin it for people who haven't heard it, do you? You really want to say, just go and listen. I don't think it needs a lot of commentary. I don't think it doesn't need much explanation. Right. I think you just have to listen and go, good
Lord. So does
that mean,
without further ado?
Yes. Can we say that? Without further ado.
Excellent. Can't go wrong. Now, listen, one thing I've always wanted to ask you. Are you Asian, British, Scottish? British, Scottish, Asian? Asian, Scottish, British? Which one? Because it's very important, isn't it, to get them all in the right order nowadays?
I don't think it is, actually. I think the order changes depending on what you're doing, where you are, what you feel like. Yeah, you know, I mean, what sign of the zodiac are you? You know what I mean? Is that more important if you're trying to chat up a girl who wants to know what zodiac sign you are?
Exactly, you know? But yes. I'm an Aquarian. Of course, all Aquarians think the zodiac's a load of old tosh. But
of course, so am I.
Thank you.
But you know what I mean? It depends. I mean, are you from, you know, are you a Brummie when England play football? Are you English when England play football?
Are you
British when the British team's at the Olympics? Or are you a Brummie when the British team's at the Olympics?
I know exactly what you're saying.
I mean, just because you're a white Briton doesn't mean you don't have the same questions about who you are that anyone else has. I just think because of the way society is now, there's too much prominence put on certain things, and that's not necessarily a good thing or necessarily a bad thing.
No, but I agree with you entirely, as it were. So, so there you are. Now, listen, this Indian takeaway, which is what you're on here to mercilessly plug, isn't it?
No, I'm quite happy not to talk about the book at all.
That is indeed it from Media Talk this week. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to Owen Gibson, to Janine Gibson, and to Gareth McLean. I'm Matt Wells, the producer with Scott Colley. From all of us in the pod, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.